go through into Thursday. It'll carry most of the showers with it, but we'll still have some showers across the more eastern parts of the country on Thursday, the best of the brightness further west. The strong blustery wind will gradually moderate. And as we end the week and the winds become lighter, so I think frost and fog will become rather more prevalent. Still a few showers left behind, but I think for many of us we'll end the week on a drier note, and it should be rather more settled as we go through this weekend. Steve.
John, thanks very much. And we'll see what this all means for the ships in around 15 minutes from now. First on BBC Radio 4, Simon Russell Beale continues reading from the Screwtape Letters. And with the Second World War raging, the senior devil has some important advice to impart to his protégé.
My dear Wormwood, as regard your patient's general attitude to the war, you must not rely too much on those feelings of hatred which the humans are so fond of discussing in Christian periodicals. In his anguish, the patient can, of course, be encouraged to revenge himself by some vindictive feeling directed towards the German leaders, but it is usually a sort of melodramatic or mythical hatred directed against imaginary scapegoats. He has never met these people in real life. The results of such fanciful hatred are often most disappointing, and of all humans, the English are in this respect the most deplorable milksops. They are creatures of that miserable sort who loudly proclaim that torture is too good for their enemies, and then give tea and cigarettes to the first wounded German pilot who turns up at the back door. Do what you will, there is going to be some benevolence as well as some malice in your patient's soul. The great thing is to direct the malice to his immediate neighbours whom he meets every day, and to thrust his benevolence out to the remote circumference, to people he does not know. The malice thus becomes wholly real, and the benevolence largely imaginary. There is no good at all in inflaming his hatred of Germans if, at the same time, a pernicious habit of charity is growing up between him and his mother. Think of your man as a series of concentric circles, his will being the innermost, his intellect coming next, and finally, his fantasy. You can hardly hope at once to exclude from all the circles everything that smells of the enemy, but you must keep on shoving all the virtues outward till they are finally located in the circle of fantasy, and all the desirable qualities inward into the will. It is only in so far as they reach the will and are there embodied in habits that the virtues are really fatal to us. All sorts of virtues painted in the fantasy or approved by the intellect will not keep a man from our father's house. Indeed, they may make him more amusing when he gets there. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape. My dear Wormwood, I wonder you should ask me whether it is essential to keep the patient in ignorance of your own existence. That question, at least for the present phase of the struggle, has been answered for us by the High Command. Our policy, for the moment, is to conceal ourselves. Of course, this has not always been so. We are really faced with a cruel dilemma. When the humans disbelieve in our existence, we lose all the pleasing results of direct terrorism. On the other hand, when they believe in us, we cannot make them materialists and skeptics. I do not think you will have much difficulty in keeping the patient in the dark. The fact that devils are predominantly comic figures in the modern imagination will help you. If any faint suspicion of your existence begins to arise in his mind, suggest him a picture of something in red tights, and persuade him that since he cannot believe in that, he therefore cannot believe in you. I had not forgotten my promise to consider whether we should make the patient an extreme patriot or an extreme pacifist. all extremes, except extreme devotion to the enemy, are to be encouraged. If your patient can be induced to become a conscientious objector, he will automatically find himself one of a small, vocal, and unpopular society, and the effect of this on one so new to Christianity will almost certainly be good. Any small coterie, bound together by some interest which other men dislike, tends to develop inside itself a hothouse mutual admiration, and toward the outer world, a great deal of pride and hatred. Even when the little group exists originally for the enemy's own purposes, this remains true. We want the church to be small, not only that fewer men may know the enemy, but also that those who do may acquire the uneasy intensity and defensive self-righteousness of a secret society or clique. The church herself is, of course, heavily defended, and we have never yet quite succeeded in giving her all the characteristics of a faction, but subordinate factions within her have often produced admirable results. But whichever he adopts, your main task will be to get the patient to treat the patriotism or the pacifism as a part of his religion. Let him, under the influence of partisan spirit, come to regard it as the most important part. Then quietly and gradually nurse him onto the stage at which the religion becomes merely part of the cause, in which Christianity is valued chiefly because of the excellent arguments it can produce. Once you have made the world an end and faith a means, you have almost won your man. Providing that meetings, pamphlets, and crusades matter more to him than prayers and charity, he is ours, and the more religious, the more securely ours. I could show you a pretty cageful down here. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape. My dear Wormwood, so, you have great hopes that the patient's religious phase is dying away, have you? I always thought the training college had gone to pieces since they put old Slubgob at the head of it. Has no one ever told you about the law of undulation? Humans are amphibians, half spirit and half animal. The enemy's determination to produce such a revolting hybrid was one of the things that determined our father to withdraw his support from him. As spirits, they belong to the eternal world, but as animals, they inhabit time, and to be in time means to change. If you had watched your patient carefully, you would have seen undulation in every department of his life. His interest in his work, his affection for his friends, his physical appetites are all subject to a series of troughs and peaks. As long as he lives on earth, periods of emotional and bodily richness will alternate with periods of numbness and poverty. The dryness through which your patient is now going is not, as you fondly suppose, your workmanship. It is merely a natural phenomenon which will do us no good unless you make a good use of it. Ask what use the enemy wants to make of it, and then do the opposite. It may surprise you to know that he relies on the troughs even more than the peaks. Some of his special favourites have gone through longer and deeper troughs than anyone else. The reason is this. To us, a human is primarily food. Our aim is the absorption of its will into ours. But the obedience which the enemy demands of men is quite a different thing. One must face the fact that all the talk about his love for men and his service being perfect freedom is not mere propaganda, but an appalling truth. He really does want to fill the universe with a lot of loathsome little replicas of himself. Merely to override a human will would be for him useless. He leaves the creature to stand up on its own legs, to carry out from the will alone duties which have lost all relish. It is during such trough periods, much more than during the peak periods, that it is growing into the sort of creature he wants it to be. He cannot tempt to virtue as we do to vice. He wants them to learn to walk. I must therefore take away his hand, and if only the will to walk is really there, he is pleased even with their stumbles. Do not be deceived, Wormwood. Our cause is never more in danger than when a human, no longer desiring but still intending to do our enemy's will, looks round upon a universe from which every trace of him seems to have vanished, and asks why he has been forsaken, and still obeys. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape. My dear Wormwood, I was delighted to hear from Trip Tweez that your patient has made some very desirable new acquaintances, and that you seem to have used this event in a really promising manner. I gather that the middle-aged married couple who called at his office are just the sort of people we want him to know. Rich, smart, superficially intellectual, and brightly sceptical about everything in the world. And you seem to have made good use of all his social, sexual, and intellectual vanity. Did he commit himself deeply? I don't mean in words. There is a subtle play of looks and tones and laughter by which a mortal can imply that he is of the same party as those to whom he is speaking. That is the kind of betrayal you should specially encourage, because the man does not fully realize it himself, and by the time he does, you will have made withdrawal difficult. No doubt he must very soon realize that his own faith is in direct opposition to the assumptions on which all the conversation of his new friends is based. I don't think that matters much, provided that you can persuade him to postpone any open acknowledgement of the fact, and this, with the aid of shame, pride, modesty, and vanity, will be easy to do. The real question is how to prepare for the enemy's counter-attack. Sooner or later, the real nature of his new friends must become clear to him, and then your tactics must depend on the patient's intelligence. If he is a big enough fool, you can get him to realize the character of the friends only while they are absent. Their presence can be made to sweep away all criticism. If this succeeds, he can be induced to live, as I have known many humans live for quite long periods, two parallel lives. He will not only appear to be, but actually be, a different man in each of the circles he frequents. Failing this, there is a subtler and more entertaining method. He can be made to take a positive pleasure in the perception that the two sides of his life are inconsistent. This is done by exploiting his vanity. He can be taught to enjoy kneeling beside the grocer on Sunday just because he remembers that the grocer could not possibly understand the urbane and mocking world which he inhabited on Saturday evening. And, contrariwise, to enjoy the Bourdian blasphemy over coffee with these admirable friends all the more because he is aware of a deeper spiritual world within him which they cannot understand. You see the idea. The worldly friends touch him on one side and the grocer on the other, and he is the complete, balanced, complex man who sees round them all. Thus, while being permanently treacherous to at least two sets of people, he will feel, instead of shame, a continual undercurrent of self-satisfaction. Meanwhile, you will, of course, take the obvious precaution of seeing that this new development induces him to spend more than he can afford and to neglect his work and his mother. Her jealousy and alarm and his increasing evasiveness or rudeness will be invaluable for the aggravation of the domestic tensions. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape. My dear Wormwood, everything is clearly going very well. I'm especially glad to hear that the two new friends have now made him acquainted with their whole set. All these, as I find from the record office, are thoroughly reliable people, steady, consistent scoffers and worldlings who, without any spectacular crimes, are progressing quietly and comfortably towards our father's house. The habit of flippancy builds up around a man the finest armour plating against the enemy that I know, and it is quite free from the dangers inherent in the other sources of laughter. It is 1,000 miles away from joy. It deadens, instead of sharpening the intellect, and it excites no affection between those who practice it. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
Simon Russell Beale has been reading The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. The series is abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions. Tomorrow, Screwtape congratulates the junior devil on his progress, but advises caution. This is Radio 4, taking to the water. Thank you. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday the 20th of November. There are warnings of gales in all areas except Biscay, Trafalgar and Fitzroy. The general synopsis at 1800, low 150 miles north of Faroes 981, expected Humber 992 by 1800 this evening. High Fitzroy 1030, expected Trafalgar 1023 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours: Viking, north at zero, south at zero, 40s. Southerly or southwesterly, backing southeasterly, 7 to severe gale 9, becoming cyclonic 5 or 6 for a time in west Viking and west 40s, decreasing 5 or 6 later. Rain or showers, moderate or good. Cromarty, 4th. Southwest, 7 to severe gale 9, veering north 6 to gale 8, perhaps severe gale.